Inside the Birds is back. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Inside the Birds Radio here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Jeff Mosher alongside my Inside the Birds co-host, Adam Kaplan. Tyler Zuli in the window tonight, as he usually is for the Inside the Birds Radio show. The show is brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code FANATIC for a special offer when you sign up. That's code FANATIC for a special offer when you sign up only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Well, last week, Adam, we were sitting here and talking about doom and gloom and all the things that are wrong with the Eagles, and 7 days later, they're in first place in the NFC East. What do you know?
It's amazing. And there still are problems.
And yes, there are still problems.
They did. They won a game on the road.
Mm-hmm.
They looked sometimes during the game where they might be on the ropes, and they found a way to win, which is the key in the National Football League. Just find a way. And find a way to close the game. And the defense almost gave it away with the major picket fence, whatever you want to call it. They were just playing bend and don't break. I mean, that's really what that was. But again, they won the game. We'll get into it. We'll chop it up. We've got early word on coaching tape. I got some stuff as I drove in today from somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But look, it was a road win. It's hard to win. I don't care if they're fans there or not. It's hard to win. They played a team that is a little bit better than they are right now, the Niners. But we'll get into why they won and how they won, certainly over these next 2 hours. But look, it's the first time they won since late December last year. So I know fans are feeling pretty good as they came into work today for the ones who are not working at home.
Mm-hmm. All right, you and I are we might disagree a little bit on this, just about Carson Wentz. I think we agree that Carson still showed that he's not 100% back. I mean, he missed... I can think of the Richard Rodgers throw that he missed on the left side. I mean, he kind of left it up there for the cornerback or the safety, Jaquaski Tartt, to come over and did I pronounce that correct?
Jaquaski.
It's my favorite name in the NFL. Came over and made the breakup. Certainly, Miles Sanders later in the game leaks out of the backfield. Carson throws it at his feet. That wasn't a good throw. He got an interception again. That was not a good throw. And then there was a pass that was nearly intercepted. Was not a smart decision. So those four passes right there show you. Now, I know every quarterback every once in a while makes a bad throw, but I'm just saying it shows you he's not 100% crisp, not 100% recovered from what we have seen from the first 3 weeks. But I felt that at least this was like a crawl before you walk type performance for Carson, in that I thought if you compare this effort that he had last night to the previous three, you saw more accuracy, you saw more accountability, you saw better decision making. And so the question I would have for you in particular, what you glean from that, do you feel like this is a small but significant step for Carson Wentz, or did you not see enough to feel like the offense can progress a little bit more next week?
He also had another throw which could have been picked off. I thought he was a little better than the previous week with the decision making, but still he's got some things he's got to clean up. He's just not a totally comfortable quarterback, except though when they roll him out.
Mm-hmm.
He's always thrown well in the run. And we knew it. Peterson kind of gave away what they were probably going to do, is they were going to go a little bit up tempo. They did some of that. That was good to see. And some of it is who he's working with. He's just not had a lot of experience with these players. Other than Greg Ward, I mean, we're going to get to the star of the game on offense, number 13, which Travis Fulgham, we told our listeners inside the Birds on our podcast, we want us to talk 3 or 4 minutes about him. I guess I forgot about it, so people reminded us this morning,
right,
which is cool.
Right.
But, you know, we talked about him after the game, but we did devote, because we knew this was coming, as you astutely pointed out last Wednesday, they protected him. When you protect a player, that means they're probably going to be on your active roster at some point. And they did.
Mm-hmm.
They put him on the roster, and we'll talk more about him. But the problem is that Wentz is working with guys he just does not have a lot of timing with. Now, the thing that does bother me is, with Miles Sanders, he missed him twice. You talked about the one to his shoe tops. So you can see Miles was probably not mad at Carson. He's probably mad at himself that he didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Because Jeff... He was open.
That could have been a touchdown.
It certainly would have been a big play.
Poor Miles Sanders, man. There's like three straight weeks where Carson missed him on plays that could have been a touchdown.
Well, one we know would have been a touchdown 2 weeks ago.
That
against the Bengals, it clearly was on a wheel route. I mean, you got to hit that. That's the frustrating thing with Wentz this season, which we started seeing it last year. Not really any in 17, very little in 18, but started last season. Just some throws he would normally hit, he's not hitting it. And it's just maddening if you evaluate the quarterback position. I'm sure the coaches look at it and say, what's happening here? Why can't you make this routine throw? Peterson doesn't like when you say it's a simple throw, but it really is. These are throws that he should be able to make. And he's not like he's in his first or second year now. This is year five. Mm-hmm. He's your full-time starting quarterback. You got to hit these throws in the National Football League.
All right, I have two takeaways on the offense in general. The first on Carson is this. At very least, he showed more confidence in throwing the ball to guys. And amazingly, the guys he was throwing to are guys that most of the league have never heard of, right? I mean, a lot of Eagles fans had never heard of Travis Fulgham until he caught that pass that was 42 yards. But if you go back 1 week earlier in that tie against the Bengals, something you and I talked about last Monday night, there were two particular plays that really stood out. There was DeSean Jackson wide open at the 4-yard line, 3-yard line, and for whatever reason, Carson just did not pull the trigger. He looked at it and got sacked. There was also a play later in the game where Zach Ertz lined up as an inline right next to Dallas Goedert. All right, they were both inline, kind of a play-action look. And then he just releases down the left side, puts a nice in move on the corner, wide open. And again, Carson rolls to that side. Has to see it, but he winds up throwing short to Miles Sanders. And we were talking about him just either not seeing it or not trusting it. And I think that there's evidence to both. He might have seen it and not trusted a guy, or just not trusted the guy altogether or not seen it. But when you see him last night, Adam, he threw to everybody. He threw to Hightower. He threw to Miles. He threw, obviously, three times to Travis Fulgham. He threw it to Ertz. There wasn't a guy that he looked reluctant to throw the ball to. And it's tough for me to reconcile how you can't 1 week throw the ball to guys like DeSean Jackson and Zach Ertz, but the following week, you're throwing it up in the air at the game's most important moment to Travis Fulgham, but he did it. So maybe there is some maturity, some kind of the leap from last week to this week. Maybe it's about coaching. Maybe it's about film study. Maybe whatever it was that was inside Carson Wentz, he knew he had to use all the weapons at his disposal, and he did it. And I give him a little credit for that, for overcoming whatever it was that was plaguing him the weeks prior to not do that.
We said last year on our show that this is when he was really struggling midseason. I mean, really struggling. And he was down in pass targets.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was, what we had said is he had to just trust him. Just put it on them. If they drop it, it's on them. And it's also on the receiver's coach if they're not running the right route. And we saw what happened to receiver's coach after last season. So just do your job and then let them do their job as well. And on a night where the Niners completely shut down Zach Ertz, he had 4 catches for 9 yards, okay? Mm-hmm. 2.3 yards per catch. So they had his number. I mean, Richard Rodgers ran farther routes than Ertz did. In fact, Rodgers should have had that deep ball that Wentz was clearly missed. I mean, it just missed too much air. In fact, it should have been picked off, by the way. Absolutely should have been picked off. The DB saw it.
He played the body and not the ball.
He should have been picked off.
Yeah.
Wentz is just not, he's just not a clean, comfortable quarterback. This is who he is right now. Will he break out is up to him, not up to the coaches as much. In terms of day-to-day, this is what you have to do. Though I still question how much he's really listened to his coaches sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes he wants to do his own thing. That's when other teams watch their coaching tape, they sometimes struggle with his mechanics. There's still some stuff there. The touch on the football, throwing with anticipation like he used to do when you put it out for your pass target to go get.
Mm-hmm.
He's not doing that right now. So when our listeners watch him, you'll see that difference because it's very, very striking.
Right. So my second takeaway on the entire offensive performance, Adam, is that there's an expression, past success is not an indicator of future success, right? Almost like, the thing on your objects in your rear view are not as large as they appear. Okay. If you look at what the Eagles did, and I give a lot of credit to Doug Peterson, he literally told you what he was going to do. He was going to get the short game going. He's going to get the tempo going. Everything the Eagles did last night, except for the Fulgham bomb, right, was pretty much nickel and diming the ball down the field. It was Carson Wentz roll out here. Maybe it's a run. Maybe it's a quick pass to the tight end, a little Miles Sanders outside zone, a little this, a little that, a little Hightower slant. I mean, he gave you every single piece of short action game that he could to A, get Carson in a rhythm, and B, to put the ball in the hands of some people who can make plays, right? And it was successful. But when you really look at the game situationally, they only scored 17 offensive points. They were 4 of 13 on third down, right? And this was the most balanced offense that Doug has ran. I think it was 28 runs, 28 passes. Now, some of those runs were Carson Wentz scrambles. They might have been passes, but no matter what, it was going to be close to 50-50, right?
Yeah.
So for those saying today, and I've heard this a lot in the airwaves, and we'll have to address this with the callers. For those, the people saying today that the Eagles found something, they had a rhythm, they moved the ball, I have to come back and say, and then some people saying, well, you got to keep running like you did and run more. They did all of that, and they scored 17 offensive points against a defense that didn't have its top three corners, didn't have Nick Bosa, right? Didn't have another defensive lineman who was out.
Solomon Thomas.
Thomas. Right. They basically did it against the defensive version of themselves.
Actually, I would have thrown more. They completely shut down Miles Sanders. He ran for just over 3 yards a carry. I give them credit. I don't think it had anything to do with his glute injury. I just think that they stopped him.
Mm-hmm.
They tried the Jalen Hurts package. Had some success. Then you saw the snap, which he dropped. That's a little bit concerning. By the way, did you buy Peterson's response to, I think it was Les Bowen's question,
which was about why he wasn't used?
Yes.
We have the sound on that. We'll get into that a little bit.
Yeah, that was interesting.
No, I don't understand it. I've heard some different theories. None of them make sense to me. Here's what Doug said, and we'll get into it. Doug basically said, look, you're trying to ground the clock, right? You're trying to hit ground and pound at that point, and we have running backs that are more geared for that style of play. Corey Clement's bigger. And my point is, well, if you're trying to, you know, milk the clock and you have a lead, what you want the opponent to do is run out of timeouts, right? And when you get first downs, they have to call timeouts. Your best runner is Miles Sanders. So even though he's not a power guy, if he slips through the crack, gets a first down on a run when you were just trying to run up the middle, which he's very capable of doing, now the offense has to call a timeout and they got to start burning their timeouts. So I don't understand the whole, like, let's just throw Corey Clement in there and get like a 1 yard and 2 yard gain because we're trying to be a power running team here. That did not make any sense to me.
Yeah, that was a little bit odd. And I know what he meant about, yeah, from a body frame standpoint, sure. I can understand why you'd want Clement, though Clement is not as heavy as he once was when he came into the National Football League. He's probably just maybe no more than 5 pounds heavier than Miles Sanders. But the fact of the matter is, when you look at it, it was a strange decision to take your starting running back out. They had not done that before with him to grind out a clock. So we'll see if that continues. But it's just something to note when you're watching this team, if they do get a lead, because the first time they've been able to do this late in the game, you know, where they could get, you know, kind of pound the ball late, but the problem yesterday in that game was in terms of moving the football, just the lack of playmakers. Yes, Fulgham, they're onto something with him. He's, I wouldn't call him fast, but he's super athletic and he's long.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got that now. So teams now, the opponents starting with the Steelers, will see this on tape. But without Jackson, without DeSean Jackson, Quez Watkins, we're not exactly sure when he's going to be back. He just started practicing this last week. Coming back from his injury, he's still in injury reserve. Until they get speed downfield, guys that they could count on, John Hightower right now is not that guy. They just don't. He did have two nice catches.
Yeah, because let's address
but
that.
They don't have that yet.
Because I tweeted last night exactly what you just said, that you can tell the 49ers have no respect for any perimeter speed that the Eagles have, so they're playing everybody close up at scrimmage. They're putting guys on Ertz, and that there's just not going to be that many openings. And people were tweeting back, I thought John Hightower had speed. So it's not that John Hightower can't stretch the field, but the Eagles are battling a whole lot of obstacles here. They can't just sit back, have Carson Wentz on a five-step drop, and throw the ball down the field to Hightower, A, because Carson hadn't shown that he had any accuracy on the deep ball very much, and B, every pass Carson Wentz threw was outside of the pocket. I mean, I know the offensive line did a nice job under the circumstances, but have asked Carson Wentz to try to stay in the pocket, and he did have to a couple times and got hit, was not in the game plan.
Well, here's the thing is, whether it's accurate or not has nothing to do with the fact you have to throw the football deep. You have to. Every game, you must throw the ball deep, period, mm-hmm. End of story. Like, any coach who doesn't do that doesn't get it, because you've got to, by formation variation, you've got to scheme guys to get open deep. That's your job. And the quarterback, whether he's accurate or not, you've got to throw. You've got to make the defense respect you, and I love that they took a shot. I don't care if Carson's accurate or not. You've got to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing. You saw what they did the first play of the previous game. that was covered very well.
DeSean Jackson,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, you do it. You got to go into every game. You got to take your shot place. But I'm telling you, the lack of speed on the outside, it's a problem again. And not having Goddard as their vertical guy at tight end, he's faster and more explosive than Zach Ertz. That's a fact.
Well, let's get into how they solved this problem as far from an injury standpoint, because DeSean Jackson without with a hamstring, I believe you reported on our podcast, Inside the Birds, which dropped 6 a.m. this morning and will drop again Wednesday and Friday, that DeSean had a grade one hamstring strain. Now, with DeSean and hamstrings, it tends to be more than one game. So I don't know. I guess we have to see if he's going to be able to get
on
practice.
It's a 1 to 2 week injury. Right, exactly.
Right.
He's got to practice first, then they'll get a better idea. I don't know where it came out that some people thought he was close to playing. It was completely false. I don't know where that came from, but mm-hmm. No, he wasn't even close to practicing. It's not that he couldn't. You don't want to push this injury because of A, it's a strain. B, we know the history of DeSean with these injuries. So, boy, they need him. And Alshon Jeffrey, another one. I don't know what happened Thursday. Like he would work Friday. He didn't limited, and that's, as you know, Jeff.
Lots of walk
practice,
right?
Yeah. Exactly. But the fact of the matter is,
did they say he was limited on Friday?
Friday, yes.
Wow, limited at a walkthrough is just not
well,
a
whatever
concern.
They do on Friday. It's a Friday, it's under an hour, so they need to get him. They need bodies out there because this offense could be something different. Mm-hmm. They could get some veterans out there who they badly need.
Right. Goddard not coming back for this Pittsburgh game.
No, he's on injured reserve.
All right. So really the most that you can expect to change is maybe you get DeSean back, right? I mean, is Alshon still, I would have to think, is kind of iffy on this.
Yeah, until he starts taking full practice, he won't be playing. So they just need to get I mean, it's really interesting. What we had reported back in mid-August was true. And what I said was, barring a surprise, he will not be on reserve PUP to start the season. He wasn't. Mm-hmm. And Howie Roseman said it in his press conference right after the cut down to 53 that their understanding was he'd be back by week 6. Well, this is week 5.
Right.
And it's still not, well, now we'll see this week what he can do and he can't do. I don't know if he's had a setback or not, but this has been surprising me that he's not even taken a full practice yet. It's really not what I was expecting. I don't think that they were expecting that either, so we'll see what happens.
All right, so we'll have to get more update on that as the week goes. Yeah. We will. So what I would say about is this. They need either DeSean or Alshon to get on the practice field this week and play for two reasons. One, clearly they don't have a lot of playmakers. And when you play that number one Pittsburgh Steelers defense, or at least it was number one last year, you need as many playmakers as possible. But I think number two, Adam, is I don't know if we can truly gauge Carson Wentz's quote-unquote improvement yesterday from the first three games until you put a guy like DeSean or Alshon on the field and say, all right, now you got another playmaker. You got yourself in a little bit of a rhythm last week. Let's see if you can take it up now. Let's see if that translated. Let's see if that carries over now. You got an extra playmaker on the field. Can you put the ball in the air a little bit
but
more?
But again, though, he's still when we talked about Miles Sanders being open twice. He missed him.
Mm-hmm.
Other
but, Adam, I mean,
missed.
Every quarterback. I mean, Tom Brady threw a pick six.
But again, but this has happened every week.
I know, but I'm saying he missed less people yesterday than the week before and the week before and the week before.
I mean, if you want to call that improvement, okay.
That's my point. That's what we need to see.
You and I are not seeing it the same way. I just don't think he's the same. In fact, I know he's not the same quarterback.
I'm not telling you he's the same quarterback from 2017 or 18, but that throw to Travis Fulgham is not a throw he made.
No, that was a big time throw.
I thought the slant to Hightower was pretty. I mean, he had a couple of pretty good throws. Yeah, the throw to Ertz.
The throw to Ertz the previous week was phenomenal.
Yeah, I'm talking incremental here.
It's just not enough. It's not reflective of the talent that he is. That's what's so maddening because you know how gifted he is. It's just hard to understand why he's not playing. And I thought you made a great point on our show that we put up this morning, where if he just plays average football, they're going to be so much better. He's
right.
not playing.
He doesn't turn the football over.
No.
Correct.
It's the turnovers, and it's the inaccuracy.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to understand. If he plays average football, where you go, you know what, he was okay today?
Mm-hmm.
Not great, not good, but okay. They're going to have a 500 record. Because their D-line, which we're going to get into, their defense, which was interesting. Some of the things that they did last night, which we've been calling for,
mm-hmm.
and they're doing more. So we'll find out.
Yeah, I mean, he played tough football yesterday. I would say he played average football, but again, the first few weeks he had more playmakers around him, so you could literally look at him and say, "I don't know what your problem is." There's DeSean open. There's Zach open. You had Jalen Reagor open. You missed him. This time, I've got to consider also the fact that his best playmakers were after Ertz were Travis Fulgham and John Hightower and Greg Ward. I feel like that's why I want to see and need to see Deshaun or Alshon on the field next week to see if that makes the difference. And if it's not, I can say, Adam, you were 100% right. He's not a little bit different.
But the great ones or the very good ones make lesser players better.
That's fair.
That's what he did in 17, somewhat in 18, not as much as he needed to until the final quarter of last season. The Fulgham throw was big time. There's no doubt about it. In fact, what
it was a great throw.
Great throw. And also, his first catch that Fulgham made, the 15-yarder, was beautiful. The route was great.
Mm-hmm.
So they give them, I don't know who found them or how they found them. Peterson confirmed what I had heard. They had a draftable grade on him.
Right.
But that's a good job of scouting by them. However they figured this out to claim him off waivers, good job by the Eagles.
Yeah, they literally probably looked at anybody they knew can run a little bit, and he happened to be one of them.
Wise guy.
All right, 610-632-0975. We got to come up on a break here. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about this game, what it means for the future, get into defense a little bit, and obviously take your calls. Adam Kaplan, Jeff Mosher here on Inside the Birds Radio on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic. Now, back to Inside the Birds.
With Jeff Mosher and Adam Kaplan.
Presented by DraftKings Sportsbook on 97.5 The Fanatic, Philadelphia.
All right, Inside the Birds Radio, back here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Jeff Mosher with Adam Kaplan. We're going to move off Carson Wentz a little bit, get into the offensive line. Obviously, Adam, the big news that we broke on our pregame show on Sunday. I hope everybody checks it out on the Inside the Birds YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook pages. Even before the offensive line movement, we had two big nuggets. That one, your nugget that Jalen Mills was going to move from safety to corner to play in that game. And you know what? I thought Jalen held up his own pretty much in that game. You know, sometimes we're hard on Jalen, but he is what he is, right? Moved to corner, did an adequate job. But then, of course, Jordan Mailata making his first start at left tackle in place of Jason Peters. And for those old enough to remember the game in 2008, I believe it was, as Sunday night game, same thing, Sunday night, NBC primetime, Trey Thomas has to take that game off to get his knee looked at, right? And Winston Justice makes his debut at left tackle, and that was a nightmare for Donovan McNabb, Andy Reid, and the Eagles offense. And the one thing that came out of that game, as OCU Manure himself, I believe, had six sacks, was Andy got criticized for not protecting Winston more. No tight end, no chipping. There was, but people didn't see it. But really, not no extra.
He doesn't believe in it.
Yeah.
Peterson's the same way.
And he didn't.
No. I'm told that, so we might as well get into that. Mailata, for his first start ever, was solid. He has some challenges with technique because, remember, he is new to football. This is his third season with the Eagles, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
His first start, his first playing in an NFL game was this season. He had not played in the previous 2 years in a regular season. So he's just still learning. He had to learn how to put on his helmet 2 years ago, okay? This guy never played football in his life. He's,
right.
he's a rugby player.
Right.
So if you take all that into account, you would give him a fairly high grade. Had he been playing 5 or 6 years, you would give him a moderate grade because he had some plays he'd like to have back.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the false start was, how about this? What he said after the game, the reason why he had it, he said he was not used to the cadence. And I guess he had to get that straight. I mean, this is all new to him. But some of the plays, he looked like a man. Like you go, wow, okay, he is 6'8". He is 350 pounds. He is a super freak athlete. Like you got to, if you're an Eagles fan hearing Jeff and I right now, you should feel pretty good about it. First start. Here's what you wanted. You wanted a base to build from. And there's a super base to build from. And he's such a great kid and a quick learner. That's
right.
What they tell me is that you normally don't have to tell him how to do something twice. You just have to show it to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I like what he said after the game, that Lane Johnson, Jason Kelsey, and obviously Jason Peters have been great with him, particularly the tackles. because they play the position. They know it, and that's what he's going to play. He's not a guard. They've not played him at guard. They're not going to play him at guard. He's either going to be the right a right tackle or left tackle of the future, depending on what happens with Andre Dillard. And then if they bring back Mailata down the road, I know that we're not really talking about future years, but just to see how they think of him. These, not only these next two games, Peters is probably going to be out for at least past his IR designation, probably 4 weeks or more. So it would be interesting to see what would happen if he played really great, lights out, so to speak, what they would do when Peters is healthy. That's a good problem to have.
It definitely is. I agree with you. I think for a guy that size, 6'8", 340, 350, it's difficult for him to play low and maintain that pad leverage. I thought he did a decent job of that. I think as you talk about building that bridge, the first thing you're looking for out of him is that he can hold his own, that it's not going to be a Winston Justice type of game where he is a turnstile. Now, he didn't, in fairness, it's not like he had to face Nick Bosa the way Justice had to face OCU Manura. But nonetheless, when he was one-on-one, Adam, I felt he held his own, and he showed toughness. He battled out there. He actually, there were times where I felt like he started to get beat, but he moved his feet well. And there were times in the run where he would just shove a DT out of the way. And you saw that toughness, that physical edge that they're looking for out of that left tackle spot. So that's good. Obviously, and I think this goes for the entire offensive line, which had a lot of backups in, when they were blitzed or when there were line games like twists and stunts and things, that's when the struggles came in. But I think you expected that, and that's why Doug Peterson's game plan, for the most part, was get Carson outside of the pocket as much as possible, and you saw all those rollouts. But I agree. I think you got to be encouraged by what you saw out of Jordan Mailata. The key is now somebody has tape on Jordan Mailata now.
Yeah.
The Steelers know what he can do, and they know what he can't
do. They actually didn't play a lot of games last night, I was told. They didn't do a lot of stunts.
No, not a lot. I thought the linebacker blitzes was about as much.
No, but they didn't do a lot of looping. They didn't do a lot to confuse Mailata last night. In fact, that's what I was expecting to happen with that left side, because you've got two people in Herbig and Mailata who are new.
Right.
And I thought for sure they would do it. And by the way, I'm told there was never even a thought to play Pryor at left tackle. It was Mailata or bust.
Good. I mean, there shouldn't have been a thought.
No, because I know some people wanted Pryor to play there. No. They were sticking with Herbig and Pryor. Prior, we'll see what happens when Peters comes back. They'll have some decisions to make. It would be a good decision to make if Mailata plays really well at left tackle. That'd be great for them. Look, this has been, he's been sort of a phenom, a freak.
Right.
He's been hurt a lot with back stuff.
Uh-huh.
He didn't have surgery last year, as we reported on our show last year. He had an epidural just to get his back right, but his back's been great. But he is a big guy who's just trying to, you know, find his way at a new position. It's really been remarkable, the progress that he's made. I remember his first practice. I was like, oh boy, this is going to be an interesting one, because I don't think he knows what he's doing. But, you know, there were a lot of people who were sick and tired of him getting hurt with his back. I get it, folks, but the NFL teams must have patience. Fans have no patience. You have to ignore the noise. Do not worry about what the fans think. When you're building your football teams, fans have no say in it. It's your development, your player development. The coaches have to develop the players. You pick the players and hope it works out. If it doesn't, you're going to be subject to public scorn, which is what has happened here sometimes.
Yeah, one thing I really liked on the runs, right, there was one specific play where I think it was just like a lead draw to Miles Sanders, where it starts off as a combo block, so him and Herbig go together on the DT, and then he jumped into the second level and covered up Fred Warner, who's one of the best linebackers in the game.
So fast.
And just by him being so enormous, like, Fred got off the block eventually because he's good, but by the time he did, Sanders was already into the second level and doing his thing. So when you have a guy that mobile, that nimble, that athletic at that size, as long as you mentioned, the foundation, you can keep adding to it and adding to it, I think you're very encouraged by what you saw out of Mailata. 610-632-0975. Let's go to the phones and talk to Dave in North Philly. What's going on, Dave? You're on Inside the Birds Radio on the Fanatic.
Hey, what's up, fellas?
How you doing, man?
First things first, man, I've been out all day working in the city. I was looking for all the blue. How about them Cowboys? I ain't seen not one star or nothing. Only thing sky was the sky was the only thing blue.
So wait a minute. So you telling me when the Cowboys win, you see the star, you see the blue? Really? Oh, the bandwagon fans. I got it.
I'm a delivery driver, so I'm in.
Oh, gotcha.
I mean, so, you know, every time I come around, I have my Eagles cap on win or lose. So they're all you an Eagles fan. I ain't hear one chirp, ain't seen no.
You know what's so funny about 2020, Dave, right? If I would have told you going into the year that the Eagles weren't going to get repeatedly beat over the top on defense like they were last year. Probably no time, maybe only once in their first four games, you'd probably be like, oh, well, that means the Eagles are going to be like 3-1, because that, or at least 4-0, maybe 3-1, because that was their Achilles heel last year. And then the same thing with the Cowboys. If I were to tell you that Dak Prescott was going to throw for like 650 yards
over back-to-back weeks. Over 500 and still lost.
And they were going to lose those games.
It's like the Super Bowl.
That's
for
2020
Eagles.
For you.
Yep. So what's on your mind, my friend? What do you got?
A couple segments ago, you mentioned that great players make the other players around
correct.
Them better.
Yep. Good quarterback,
I started to think about this. All right. Kurt Warner, Larry Fitzgerald, yep. Hall of Famer, Torrey Holt, Isaac Bruce. Brady, even though he's won with weaker talent, the best he ever looked was with Randy Moss. They didn't win the championship, but if you're going to say when was he the most offensively prolific, he was prolific with Randy Moss.
Yeah, it works both ways. I don't think Adam was trying to suggest that a great receiver can't help make a quarterback.
A quarterback should make the others around him better. That's really what you want. That's the way it was taught to me, just so you know.
Yeah, I think about it, and I'm just racking my brain. I'm just like, but even the crap quarterbacks, I mean, Stafford was running around with Megatron. Ocho Cinco was out there in Cincinnati. Now, again, they didn't win, mm-hmm. but then I went around with the guys that won. Peyton Manning, Harrison, and
Reggie Wayne.
But he all made them better, though. But he also made them better.
It's symbiotic, right, Dave? I mean, they and look, I think I get your point here, and I'm with you on this, and thanks for the call. That's why I'm kind of adamant, Adam. I'd like to see what Carson Wentz looks like with Deshaun back on the field and Alshon after a game in which he did help make his teammates better yesterday, because I want to see if he's now getting back or closer to something that's going to help them win games, or if they really got an issue here that's even longer term, which they might. But it's not fair, in my opinion. I agree with you that a quarterback can make some players around him better. But when you start talking about guys who are just making their first game ever, like a Fulgham or a Greg Ward, I mean, at some point you have to put some decent talent around him also. The organization has not helped them in that regard over the last year or two.
Well, no, they tried.
I mean, yes, they have tried, but they have not.
But the problem is,
yeah,
Jackson's hurt.
Right.
Okay, now you could question where they should have brought Deshaun back. That's totally fair game mm-hmm. based on his injury history and his age. He turns 34 December. Alshon Jeffrey, they decide to extend his contract. We know how that's worked out. I mean, they restructured it. That hasn't worked out.
Mm-hmm.
They addressed the receiver position with Rager. Unfortunately, he got hurt.
Right.
Quez Watkins got hurt. So
that's the story.
Yeah. I mean,
they've been very snake bit. And it's not just this year, right? Like, when they decided to move on from Torrey Smith after winning the Super Bowl, they signed Mike Wallace, who was coming off a very nice year. He got hurt and never played for them, I think, after week two.
Wait, against Tampa, he got hurt. He never played for them.
Right.
Exactly.
So what did they do? The next offseason, they traded for Deshaun Jackson. Brought him in here. He got hurt week two. Did not play. Well, he played for like three snaps later in the season, but he basically didn't play the entire season. So what did they do? They drafted Jalen Reagor. And what happened? He got hurt, and he's probably not going to be back until November.
I have no problem with you addressing the position in the draft. Like, that's what you should do. You need to get younger.
Right.
But when you decide to keep bringing back, not just receivers, Jason Peters, and we know why he came back because of the injury to Brandon Brooks. They were going to play him at right guard. We know what happened, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But when you build when you have the base of your team with older players, it's going to come and get you. You got to turn the page, and you got to be willing. It's really got to start with Jeffrey Lurie, the owner. He's got to tell Howie Roseman and Annie Wyatt, listen, do not worry about the record this season. Let's do what Seattle did. John Snyder, their general manager, told me, we are not rebuilding. We are retooling. We're going to try to win as we get younger.
Mm-hmm.
Howie Roseman said his biggest challenge is to not move on from older players. He said, you were on ever at the combine.
Yep.
And I appreciate Howie saying that, but it tells you a lot. Vinny Curry's back, okay? Older mm-hmm. player, he's hurt.
Right.
Jason Peters, older player, 38 years old, he's hurt. Deshaun Jackson turns 34, he's hurt. Alshon Jeffrey's 30, he's hurt. You see the trend here?
Oh, I see it.
It's not good.
I definitely agree.
And the owner needs to free Roseman and Weidel to do their job and say, listen, guys, this is what I want next year. We're going strictly with the draft, very late in free agency, plus we know about the cap situation. And let's build this thing and let's have fun with it
mm-hmm.
and get younger and build us just like we did under Andy Reid in 2000,
mm-hmm.
when they flipped the roster and got really younger. You were covering the team in the mid-2000s, Jeff. You saw how it was with B. West and the younger players that Andy drafted when he got personnel control, and they really turned the thing around.
Yeah, look, I'm the biggest proponent of draft and develop and not spending money in free agency, but of course when you do that, you have to, A, draft well, B, you have to have a sound draft philosophy as well. And we've talked about this.
That's a different discussion. That could take 5 hours. We don't have.
We have done hour long podcasts on this. The whole philosophy, and I think it's fair for anybody right now at this point to have questioned their most recent philosophy. Let's talk to Mike in King of Prussia. What's going on, Mike? You're on Inside the Birds Radio on the Fanatic.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Good.
How are you?
So here's my thing. I was listening today, and people are calling in, and people are excited about a win, and they're like, "We're in first place," and you know, we go on a run, we can make it into the playoffs, which I think a lot of people are...
whatever that looks like.
Over-exuberant at this time, like, you know. But here's my thing. Does making the playoffs with this team, is that going to hurt them long-term than actually failing to make the playoffs and having to look yourself in the mirror and see, say, what we've been doing has not been working and being honest with yourself? Because... the last 2 years, we made it into the playoffs. We kind of limped in. Like 1 year, we won a game we shouldn't have, you know. And then last year, we got completely waxed.
Let me throw this back at you, Mike, because I feel like I understand where you're getting at, and you're making a valid point. But last year, not only did they make the playoffs, right? They won the division. Okay.
Yes.
Did they fire coaches or not?
But they neutered their head coach by firing those coaches. So, like, they didn't make big moves. They made, like, those offensive coordinators, which I didn't even agree with.
Right. That's fine. And we could sit here and have, just like with the draft philosophy, Adam, anybody wants to call in, we could have a deeper and longer philosophical discussion about the mentality behind that. But to answer your question, when they were 9-7 and won the division and had a really hot December, it didn't force upper management or ownership to say everything is good. They still made moves that they felt were going to make the team better. We can argue whether it did or not, and there's still some time here. But I guess my answer would be to you, I don't think just making the playoffs for this team is going to convince upper management or ownership
is fine. I agree, totally. Yeah. It's a great question, Mike. Thank you for the call.
Thanks for the call.
It's a great subject, and I've had this debate with fans over the years. No matter what market I'm talking to them in, I always go, okay, so are you telling me that making the playoffs is not an accomplishment and you don't want to make the playoffs because you think they won't acknowledge that the team isn't as good as it should be?
Mm-hmm.
I think they look at it, when we look at this Eagles team here and this front office, they know that they're too old. They've got to get much younger. They still think they have the franchise quarterback. It's just he's going through a tough time right now. They know that they're deficient in some areas. Linebackers are the most obvious one. They know that they have to get younger on the offensive line. It's got to happen. They have certain challenges. We know about the Ertz contract. They have a lot of issues to get through. It's not going to get solved in one offseason. That is the problem with this Eagles roster. It's not a one offseason fix, even if they go through free agency. In addition to the draft, it's not going to get hit because they have so many holes and issues to get resolved with the roster on both sides of the football. But if they do it the right way and the owner sets the table and tells them, I want young, I'm done with older players. We want to build this with guys in their early to mid-20s with a couple selected veterans in their late 20s, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Other than Zach Ertz, obviously, if he's still in the roster, he has another year left. So.
Right.
But that's
right.
It. I would go young, man.
Yeah.
That's me.
And by the way, the same thing happened 2 years ago.
Keep Lane Johnson, obviously, he's 30, and then you make a decision. But Pete, we mentioned the older guys.
Mm-hmm.
You have to move on.
2 years ago, just to illustrate my point to Mike, right? 2 years ago, they didn't even win the division. They backed into the playoffs. Nick Foles came and saved the season, won those last games against the Rams and against Houston. They got the sixth seed. And then they knocked off the third-seeded Bears in the first round of the Wild. They went to Chicago, won the game. Everybody remembers the double doink, right? And two coaches, I believe, were fired that year, right? The defensive line coach and the wide receiver coach were both fired that year. So
yeah, we
broke that story.
We co-reported. Right. It was in early January. What happened was, well, there with Gunter Brewer, he needed to go. He was a college coach. It just didn't work. Nobody, they just were not happy with him. And,
yes.
And Chris Wilson, there were some issues with some of the players and Wilson. They just had issues with each other, and it had to happen. But look, I'll say this. I'll say one thing about the way things have been done here. Whether you agree or not, the firings, it shows that they're, even if they make the playoffs, they're willing to do something. You mentioned earlier.
Right.
It's a great point. They're not complacent. It's what Jeff said about is the philosophy of how they're building. What is your identity of building this team?
Right.
That is the major question which Roseman and Weidel have to answer.
Right. Complacency, not the issue. No. Process, potentially.
What is the process?
I don't know. 610-632-0975. That's going to be a great offseason inside the birds here on 97.5 The Fanatic, if we're able to do that. I hope we are. Todd in Jersey is up next on The Fanatic. Welcome to Inside the Birds Radio, Todd.
Hi, good evening, fellas. Go Birds. How you doing?
Good.
How are you, bro?
I'm well, thank you. You know, a couple quick points just to things that you were saying. You know, I don't know that we are going to go deep in the playoffs this year. 1-1-2, and last year winning the division, I mean, actually probably cost us a higher receiver pick would be one point I wanted to make. The Alshon Jeffrey thing, when he comes back, I hope it doesn't turn into what seems to be the Zach Ertz synopsis, where you know you're getting a player who's, I don't know, invisible for whatever reason. Just seems like not getting as much exposure. And as far as the injuries go, I think it's a darn shame that the season has been shortened as much as it has with camp and whatnot, because you're seeing a lot of marquee players suffer, you know, season-ending and potentially future season-hindering injuries as a result of the lack of training.
I mean, I think we assume that is a big part of it. You know, not just that, but also, you know, no preseason games. And that is why the players fought so hard when everybody was wondering whether what there was going to be NFL football. Remember, the idea that training camp wasn't going to start on time, and these guys, the both sides were at the negotiating table, and they were hammering out health and safety protocols, and J.C. Treader, the union leader, kind of criticized the NFL for not taking enough protocol seriously, and said that we're the guys putting our lives, you know, our livelihoods on the line, not just COVID, but also going to play without the amount of training we're used to. That's why they fought so hard to get the protocols into place.
That's true. My point, if I can still make it, that I wanted to ask, I wanted to circle back to Jordan Mailata. So, you know, I think he did do okay, and I think obviously he's groomed at left tackle, and rightfully so, because of his size and his agility, and, you know, as you said, he's a freakish athlete. But when we got him and you looked at the highlight tapes, every single highlight that you saw, that man had the ball in his hands. He's a master at covering up the ball and not letting it get stripped. Am I alone in wanting to see him crash through that line in a short yard?
Wouldn't that be hilarious?
Thanks for the call, Todd.
You know what? Thanks for the call. You know what's funny? He said, as he was saying,
he wants to make him into a refrigerator, Perry?
Look what happened last night where they took Miles Sanders out of the game. Saying, wouldn't that be funny? I've never heard that you take an offensive lineman, make him a running back for a play.
No, I mean, other than an offensive lineman, yeah. No, right. No, there was. Well, wasn't
Fridge.
There one?
Fridge did it.
No, he was a defensive lineman, though.
I know.
So Dontari Poe did it, too. But and again, D-lineman. Defensive lineman.
Yeah.
I think when you have a project like Jordan, you want to use every single snap and rep in practice and making sure this guy understands his position. Maybe 3 or 4 years down the road. But then again, when you do that, you got to play somebody else the left tackle.
Let me just say something about Mailata right now, because I know.
Wait, can I have you answer that on the other side?
Yes.
Because we have to break.
Yeah, we now need to.
All right, hold that thought. We're going to get more into Mailata when we get back. Adam Kaplan, Jeff Mosher, Inside the Birds Radio here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic. Now, back to Inside the Birds.
With Jeff Mosier and Adam Kaplan.
Presented by DraftKings Sportsbook on 97.5 The Fanatic, Philadelphia.
That's right. Hour two, Inside the Birds Radio here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Jeff Mosher, Adam Kaplan. Of course, the show is brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code FANATIC for a special offer when you sign up. That's code FANATIC for a special offer when you sign up only at DraftKings Sportsbook. The number to call is 610-632-0975. We got a few calls. We'll get to them real quick. Adam, I kind of cut you off right before we had to go to the break, but you were going to make a point on Jordan Mailata.
So I don't want to rain on his parade here. It's one game, solid performance. But understand what he was up against. He didn't face Nick Bosa, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't going up against Dee Ford, who's a really good speed rusher. This week, he goes up against a different front, a 34 front. Steelers defense is just playing out of their great front. Okay, great defense.
There's a kid by the name of Watt that's going to be lining
right,
up across
Watt,
the side.
Right, right. So just understand, if Mailata does not play well, don't be discouraged. He's learning as we go here. They need to evaluate him. This is the first time they've been able to truly evaluate it. First time he's played.
Right.
So just give him time here. Fans are so about instant gratification. He must play great or he stinks. Just relax. The guy played well. I see on our message board on Facebook, we have it Inside the Birds Facebook page. People pretty excited. It's cool. But just understand it's only one game. Feel good about it, but he's got at least two more starts coming. Probably three or more. I would say at least three.
Yeah. Well, at least three. And as we just mentioned, one's Pittsburgh, and they have a great defense, and they have great pass rushers, and they're a 3-4 alignment. So that'll be San Francisco is
43. No, they're 43.
Yeah, they're a 43.
Cover three.
Right. Yeah. So they're going to face a totally different style.
Yes.
And the Pittsburgh likes the zone blitz a lot. They like to mix it up. So this will be a real test from him for what's going on upstairs.
Exactly.
Right? How he's reading the defense.
That's why I brought it up, because he's going to see things he's never seen before. Remember, mm-hmm. he's new to football, folks.
Right.
So I just want to warn people when we're here next Monday night, it may not have gone well for him, and they're not good. Eagles should not back off at all, no matter how he plays.
Right. And by the way, we talked about how Andy Reid did not protect Winston Justice. They don't believe in it, and Doug is the same way. Doug did not put a tight end next to Jordan Mailata a whole lot. He didn't do a whole lot of chipping on the edge rusher. What Doug did was design an offense that had Carson rolling out right and rolling
Which
out left
him.
So that Mailata didn't have to hold his block
right.
for 2, 3, 4, 5 seconds in his first
Fair
start.
Point.
But eventually, as we always say, you can't just avoid third down in the pocket presence of the NFL. And so we'll have to see next week if he's able to make that progression as a pocket protector for Carson Wentz. 610-632-0975. You mentioned the kind of microwave society the instant reaction. And
gotta be great or else he stinks. Bunch of,
I feel like the next caller here that we're going to bring up is going to go along line.
I hope not.
Let's talk to Jared in Jersey. He's on Inside the Birds Radio here on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Jared?
That's interesting, but I don't know what you were assuming, Jeff, but...
I see that you want to talk about Jalen Reagor, and I'm wondering if you're going to bring up other wide receivers right now who are more productive because Jalen's not playing.
Well, yeah, that's clear. Whiteside, in addition, the draft, but it was more to Adam's point about they're going to try and get younger this offseason. And to Adam, isn't that obvious? That you're always supposed to, and they would be younger if the draft picks actually got on the field.
Well, Rager's hurt, but again.
Don't say just Rager.
No, I know.
I'm talking about draft pick after draft pick after draft pick. They don't even get on the field.
Yeah, but they brought back 330-plus offensive linemen.
Because they can't draft, Adam.
Lane Johnson's not going anywhere.
Well.
What are you talking about, man? Lane Johnson's not going anywhere.
Even the recent ones. I think the Driscoll kid has played well.
It's been a good story, yeah.
Your point, Jared, it's more that your second-round pick and third-round pick this year and one of your second-round picks last year giving you virtually nothing.
That's
and then, of
what
course,
you're talking about,
ago.
Jared. Yeah. I get it. You're talking about Sidney Jones, Rasul Douglas, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. Those are costly.
Yeah, there's more than that. You can keep going.
But you don't... You
17
know,
draft.
My point is, you don't... You called up and said the Reagor pick. I don't feel like the Eagles can be raked over the coals for Jalen Reagor just because Ayuk has two touchdowns and
Jefferson
has been
off to get
very good.
Okay.
I mean, when Reagor was on the field, he was getting separation.
I guess. I guess.
You guess. I mean, you saw that in the first game. He caught a 55-yard pass, yeah. And then Carson, well, he could have ran, he should have ran a better route, but he got open right before halftime, too.
But it's the same thing. If we have a guy that catches one pass, we can't get all up in arms because he made one catch.
No, he made more than one catch in that game. I'm just saying he showed you in his first game, he stretched the field. And
that's what you were looking for.
Yard. That's exactly what he's supposed to do.
Exactly.
Yeah. I just, from the eye test, he's giving us a lot less than these other rookies are.
But here's why I was saying, Jared, and thanks for the call, this whole microwave society thing, this is already feeling like Brandon Graham is not Jason Pierre-Paul all over again, right?
And
and Earl's a different position.
But the real one is Jason Pierre-Paul, yes.
But it feels like people are already piling on Rager,
fault. The first 2 years, it was so bad here, and I know why Brandon,
right.
He blocked like everyone he could on Twitter. I never even met the guy. He blocked me. I'd never talked to the guy in my life, and he blocked me. I'm like, why does he block me?
He was a smart guy.
Yeah, thank you very much. And where's the drum roll? But look, the fact of the matter is, you got to let the guy play. The guy is hurt. I mean, it's just, he's had two injuries, unfortunately. The shoulder injury he wanted to play through, which is admirable. And then he had, by the way, I'm also told he wanted to play through his thumb injury, and the doctor said, listen, if you don't have surgery, this could be something you could have for several years.
Right.
You need to get it corrected. So we had to have surgery, and they're not going to see him probably till after the bye.
Yeah.
So
look, if people want to slam the Ortega Whiteside pick and bring up McLaurin and bring up DK Metcalf, I'm not gonna fight you on that. I mean, it's clear as day that those two guys can play and that we've seen at least a decent enough sample size of J.J. Ortega Whiteside to say he's got issues. In this offense, I don't know what his role is. He doesn't catch the ball very well. That was supposed to be his strength at Stanford. He doesn't separate at all. So that's going to be an issue, too. So, okay. But don't give me Jalen Reagor was a terrible pick just because Justin Jefferson's playing well. Ayuk is playing well. Gabriel Davis, is he a rookie as well?
The Bills,
I mean, you can cherry pick wide receivers and say they're playing well. But Jalen Reagor was out there week one, did his job. Caught a 55-yard pass on third down, broke the top of the defense, over-the-shoulder catch, and like a rookie, he had a chance to make an even bigger splash right before halftime. He didn't run that route as great as he could have. Still had a chance to catch the ball, didn't, right? And then he gets hurt.
What can you do?
Carson threw him a ball where he's going to get his head annihilated.
We're not going to know about Jalen Reagor where he's really at until he has a full offseason. It's just,
gets on the field.
Right. That too, whenever he gets here. But who knows, because he'll have missed so much time. And these young players, man, without having an offseason, Hightower did an admirable job in training camp. Actually did pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
But you're seeing the difference between training camp and the regular season. It's AAA baseball to major leagues. It's so different.
Sure.
And then when you throw in no offseason, missing over 500 snaps between 30 offseason practices or more, plus the preseason snaps, you can't make up for that. So, and I get it. Fans are seeing Justin Jefferson get off to this good start the last two games. Okay, if that's what you want to latch onto, but that's what we do here in Philly.
Right. If Reagor, I would say this, and again, it's still a small sample size, but even if Reagor had shown you nothing in week one or week two that makes you think he could get open or separate, I would be like, I'd say, okay, I understand your concern because they picked a kid last year who can't get open and separate, not having trouble, but that kid showed you his explosion. He's got it.
Hurt. He was probably college football's best punt returner last season, so that's going to be his role in addition to being... Well, the question is, for right now, Ortega Whiteside is not making it as their future X. Next year, they're probably going to have to draft a new X receiver or add one. We'll see about what Whiteside could actually do or contribute. And then you have Reagor. You want your X to be small. I mean, you want your X to be bigger. Reagor will be an incredible movement Z, just incredible movement Z, and he could also play obviously in the slot. So they'll be in good shape there, and they've got Dallas Goedert who's got to stay on the field. They've got the makings over time. When you also had John Hightower in there, maybe Quez Watkins, a very interesting group of young players at the wide receiver position, but offensive linemen, as the callers talk about, they're really older there, way too old. They got to get much younger there. You mentioned Jack Driscoll. He's got a chance.
Yeah. I've been impressed with Jack Driscoll. Yeah. I know the coaches have been impressed. And if Jordan Mailata continues to kind of grow and develop, that's a kid that they only drafted 3 years ago.
Right.
And is just now getting on the field. So I've actually credited the organization for constantly trying to bring young offensive linemen in. I mean, Nate Herbig is holding his own right now. He's in year two. He's not great, but he's not supposed to be starting. But he's starting. He's not hurting you that much right now. And so Opeta is there. And who's the other guy that they have? Luke Dariga is a guy that they called up that they like. We have to see how these guys are. But this is a position where they generally tend to at least get guys who can get in there and hold their own and then grow and develop. Like, you know, we'll have to see. I know Matt Pryor has had ups and downs. But again, is he killing you right now?
He's having some rough times, but he's not killing you. Yeah, look, they have some challenges here.
Yeah.
The listeners know it. The Eagles have some significant challenges with the cap next year and getting younger and getting more out of the younger players. That's fair game to me. They need more. Yeah, these guys are playing, but they need high-level young players.
Right.
They don't have enough of them right now.
And I didn't mention Andre Dillard. He is a big question mark.
Huge
but it's
question
not an
mark.
Answered question. I mean, he
no,
can come back next
yet.
Year,
we don't
seize
know
the left tackle spot, yeah. maybe, you know, and Jordan goes back to backup or not, but we got to see. That's the whole thing. The team has been so snake bit with injuries and you don't know who to blame. I know people want to come down on the medical staff. They want to come down on Howie. When young guys get hurt, it's not like it's just you can point the finger and say, well, you brought in all these old guys. You got young guys who are hurt, too. 610-632-0975. I mean, Goddard's relatively young. Rager is a rookie. Dillard in year two. I mean, who could have predicted that these guys were going to be out as long as they are? Avante Maddox.
It's bad luck.
Three.
I know everybody wants. Okay, the new thing is now that the fans want the whole medical staff fired.
Again?
Yeah.
That's happened. They got what they wanted two times over now.
They want them all out. you know, it's talking to the Eagles before the season started. I know this. They're really excited about the two guys they hired. Tom Hunkley's his name, I think.
Yeah, and
he was
Rath.
Here before.
Right.
And Tom...
Ted Rath?
Ted Rath, yeah, thank you. Ted Rath from the Rams, because the Rams have this history in terms of if you rank the least amount of just players on the injury report, they're like top three. They just don't have a lot of injured players.
Mm-hmm.
But they've had a lot of injuries. Now, by the way, the Eagles are not the only team. Several teams have a epidemic of injuries.
Oh, last night was the Spider-Man meme of Spider-Man pointing at Spider-Man.
Right.
I mean, San Francisco was as beat up as the Eagles were.
Crazy, but the only difference is the Eagles have not lost a lot of players for the season.
Other
than Dillard and Brandon Brooks, anyone else maybe?
No. By the way, do we have any information on if Will Parks is ever going to play again?
Yeah, he is. Yeah,
okay.
I mean, he's supposed to be back before midseason, so we're week five.
Wow.
Hopefully by week eight he'll be back.
That was a really costly injury. And again, not an old guy.
No.
Another guy hurt who's not old.
No, right? His mid-20s.
Yes. 610-632-0975. All right, on defense, Adam, the defensive line, I thought it started last week against Cincinnati, especially as the game went on and even into overtime where it started to click. You know, Barnett started to get some pressures last week. Josh Sweat, I believe, has had a sack. Has he had a sack in every game or all but one?
Sounds
because
right.
He got three sacks now in four games. So Sweat, Hargrave did not have a great game against Cincinnati, but he was out there getting his feet under him. And it all seemed to kind of really ramp up this week or last night against San Francisco. They saved the game. Right, because the pressure
100%.
That they generated against Mullins made sure that George Kittle, who caught all 15 passes thrown his way,
all 15 targets,
could have been 25 if the defensive line did not bring the pressure.
It was super bend and don't break. Whatever they tried to get some did not work. I'd said on our pregame show for Inside the Birds, well, I was seeing my player of the game going in because the Eagles will have no answer for him
because
their linebackers couldn't cover you. They're not instinctive. None of them are starting linebackers in the National Football League. They have to be because it's all that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been the one to sort of dismiss the linebacker talk because they won't be able to win mostly without having great ones. Even in 17, okay, they were much better, obviously, with Jordan Hicks and Bradham when he was still playing well and Michael Kendricks. But it's they're so below average, it's just like it's hard to watch it. And when you're watching all 22... Which means, folks, if you're not familiar with what all 22 means, it's coaching tape. You see the whole field. You're not seeing one camera angle from television. Wait till you watch them go the wrong way. It happens every single week because they're not instinctive.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what you have.
Yeah. So the D-line had to carry the burden of the linebackers and the safeties because you had Kevon Wallace out there extended for the first time, really. And
he technically started, by the way. Epps played more snaps, but Wallace technically started, so
right.
That's a small surprise because I'd heard he's way...
Well, I think that
Wallace is way behind where they need him to be. He's just...
He's a hitter, though. I think they were trying to get him in there for run defense, and then Epps for pass defense.
It's a fair point, but what I can tell you is that they've got some problems, which are not going to be able to be solved until the offseason. But as you said, if this D-line brings it, like they brought the net last 2 weeks, this game, this one last night, it's kind of like either Matt Burke said it or they said it to themselves. All right, we got to win this game for our guys. Let's go.
Mm-hmm.
And Jannard Avery, 58, is wearing Trent Cole's number. The funny thing about last night was I'm a numbers guy with jerseys, so I see 13. I'm like, Aguilar's gone. Who is that? Oh, it's Travis Fogle.
Right.
And then I see 58. I'm like, that's not Trent Cole. Who
definitely
is that?
Not Trent Cole.
Jannard Avery had not really done anything until this game.
Right.
He was like shot out of a cannon with his 5 quarterback hits. He was incredible.
Do you know how many snaps he played?
18, 19.
I think it was 16.
Okay, yeah.
That, 5 quarterback hits on 16 snaps.
I was told his package this season was going to be 12 to 20.
Uh-huh.
So a package of plays, and they got it. It worked. But why did it take it? See, I know they didn't have him in the offseason because they didn't have an offseason or a preseason.
Right, and then he got hurt, right?
Right, he got hurt, which looked like a terrible knee injury when I was there to see it.
You're noticing a pattern here? Every player that we talk about, he got hurt. He's overcoming an injury. I know.
But I just thought he would have a better role here, and we'll see. Right now, they're onto something. He stood up. That was the big thing. He stood up, and boy, it worked. I know there's some people who argue with me and say, no, he should play with his hand down. I'm like, listen, playing standing up, getting that running start, the kid was shot out of a cannon, man. It was pretty cool to see.
Yeah, well, one of the things about him being small and undersized and athletic is that when you stand him up, you also have that ability to kind of move him around or stunt him over the center and over the A-gap and kind of get him moving. You see him lined up in one area, but then where he rushes is a different area, and I think that's what they have to do with a kind of guy like that. 610-632-0975. Lance in Northeast Philly is up next on Inside the Birds Radio. What's going on, Lance?
Adam just stated he's a numbers guy. When I see 58, forget about Trent Cole. Think about Ike Reese.
Yes.
Ah, okay.
Or Jordan Hicks.
Jordan Hicks was... Well, I thought he was 53. Was he 53?
No, that was Bradham.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Jordan Hicks, yeah. There you go.
But then again, 53, I always think of that disaster named Mark Cimino.
Mark's a good call by you. Mark Cimino.
Man,
formerly the Falcons. Yeah, he was a little smaller guy. What was he, mid-2000s?
Mid-2000s,
Super Bowl team. He was actually on the Super Bowl team.
This was back when Andy Reid just had like a different set of linebackers every other year, right? Yeah, Keith Adams, and then
Keith
he's got...
Keith Adams.
You know,
who
then
they
he's
bring,
bringing in...
Who did they bring from the Packers? Who was the linebacker from the Packers?
Oh, I know who you're talking about. I can't... I can visualize it, but I can't see it.
Well, I know they brought Dahani Jones in.
Dahani Jones and
Chris Gokhan. No, he was drafted. But go ahead. He was actually 59 or 58. Go ahead, Lance. What was on your mind?
Well, you talked about the linebackers, their ability in coverage. No one was worse covering tight ends and running backs out of the backfield than Dahani Jones. He was horrific.
Well, the Eagles were the worst, by the way, for almost a decade. They
were
worse
than the
National
guy
Football
they brought
League.
In? They brought in a Steelers linebacker who used to
be Levo Kirkland.
Levon Kirkland.
Yeah,
I met him
at the 05, 06 or 07 Super Bowl.
Yeah.
He might have been 300 pounds when the Eagles had
him.
Boy,
the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Actually, I know he was. He was between 280 and 2300 when the Eagles got him.
Yeah, just having linebackers who were either past their prime or just not good enough. The more things change.
Yes.
I took a lot of time. I have three quick questions. One, why does Jim Schwartz coach from the sideline? I thought most NFL defensive coordinators are up in the press box.
Some do and some don't. Yeah, some do. No, some do or some don't. Just depends.
So you like how they have their arrangement with Doug's staff, like the beat coordinator on the sideline? It's better?
I don't think they won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I'm not sure performance. Yeah. You know, it's like a feel. Some people like the aerial view. Some people like being on the sideline and communicating up front with their players.
The play where I think it was Mike McGlinchey went out on the Brandon Ayuk unbelievable touchdown, which, hey, that's a pass play I'd like to see the Eagles try and run. We'll see down the line. Why was he diving to push Darius Slay out of the way? Don't offensive linemen just stay on their feet and attempt to move or shove?
You can cut. I mean, no, some go to the ground.
That seems illegal.
The Eagles don't do it as much anymore.
The Niners do the cut blocking.
Yeah.
Stallone doesn't do a lot of that.
Kelsey used to do that all the time years ago when he would jump out on the screen. He would go to the ground. I don't know. They haven't regulated that out, though, right?
But there's certain things you can... it's not caught. You can't cut like you used to.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, you still see it. You still see it. I saw a lot of it on Sunday.
Is Slade okay? And who do you think...
Yeah, he's fine.
On the Steelers?
Oh, man, here's the... Okay,
that's
Lance, thanks for the phone call.
I'll give you an
early look at the Steelers. They will go spread the entire game. They will go 3 and 4 receivers the entire game to declare the Eagles, we want to see who your third corner is, because you don't have one.
Right.
So
we barely have a second one.
I know. So they're going to spread them out. Randy Feekner, the OC of the Steelers, I'd bet the house that they're going 11 or 12, they might go 4 receivers and 1 back and no tight end. A lot.
Right. You got to have Slay on Juju, though. I would think that this is one of those games
Yeah, that's fine. But Deontay Johnson's a stud. He had a concussion, but he should be ready for this game.
Right.
Eric Ebron and Vance McDonald and... They're loaded, man, at wide receiver. Chase Claypool, the rookie, second-round pick.
He's averaging like 25 yards of reception right now.
I know, he's huge. Eagles are in trouble, corner. This game, oh, my God, they're in trouble.
Yeah, they are. And this is going to be... That's why we talked about what you saw yesterday. I actually think it's almost more significant that they were able to get the quarterback in a little bit of a rhythm, more so than they won the game. If they had lost the game, but Carson Wentz still played decently like he did... You're only still a half game out of first place, even though you don't have any wins. But at least the quarterback got yourself in a little bit of a rhythm, and we'll see if he can carry that over against the Steelers. All right, we're going to go to the break. Bill and Bristol, hang on. We'll get you on the way back. Also, we got to talk about this linebacker situation, because it is not good. All right, Adam Kaplan, Jeff Mosier here on Inside the Birds Radio on 97.5
The Fanatic. 97.5
The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, Inside the Birds Radio back here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Jeff Mosher and Adam Kaplan, last half hour to go before we hand off to Devon Givens. And to answer your question about that, you know, veteran linebacker from Green Bay that Andy brought in, we are fortunate to have Andrew DeCecco, who does a lot of writing for InsideTheBirds.com, checking in with the Nate Wayne. Forgot about
him. He was
Nate
number
Wayne.
59.
Yeah.
Nate Wayne. The Eagles had a history of bringing in the early 2000s through mid-2000s, and then also for the people over 40, might remember Art Monk coming in here, Mark Bavaro, Roy Green.
Yeah.
Some of these Hall of Famers who would just come in late in their career and just... Dorsey Levins wasn't a Hall of Famer, but he was washed up.
Irving Fryer.
But he put up numbers.
Yeah, he was actually pretty good.
Blaine Bishop, I know a little bit. Blaine, unfortunately, didn't work quite out. No one's forgiven him or anyone that went. Joe Jervis is still running. Sorry, folks.
Yeah.
Inside joke.
Joe Jervis is from?
Penn State.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right. 610-632-0975. Well, remember Mike Labinjo, by the way?
Mike, he was from Canada.
I know. Stood out to me. But clearly, linebacker remains a problem.
An issue. Still an issue.
And here's the thing, man. It's not like the fans are the only ones to know it. I mean, this organization knows it. Now, why the linebackers coach, Ken Flagel, continues to want to play this guy and act like he's something he's not is beyond my comprehension.
Talking about Nate Gary, is that who you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is Nate Gary.
I don't understand. I don't understand it either. Alex Singleton, who had the pick 6, let's remove that.
Mm-hmm.
He's better than Nate Gary.
Going to have to play a little bit now.
I'm told he's better than him, okay?
He's better than Nate Gary.
Yes.
Well, you don't have to convince me, right? I mean, he seems more fundamentally sound, at least.
Look, the guy was in CFL. I talked to a CFL personnel person who... knows Singleton. He scouted him.
Uh-huh.
He said he's a fourth NFL linebacker on a very good team. You could spot play him. Well, guess what? That's better than anyone they have.
Well, that's the crazy thing, because I was even told going into the year that it was 50-50 on whether Singleton was going to make the team, because they had drafted Sean Bradley,
right.
And they, of course, had drafted Davion Taylor in the third round and all these traits and everything, and the guy can't get on the field. In fact, you would think... Normally, your third-round pick, if he's not playing, is going to be the next guy up if there's an injury, but no.
By the way, there is. T.J. Edwards is going to be out a while.
Right, and that's why Alex Singleton was in the game. And so now, Adam, Here's what's really interesting. I never want anybody to get hurt, of course, so hopefully the Eagles stay healthy. Yeah. They're going to play nickel, so it's still going to be Gary and Riley a lot. You'll see Singleton come on the field when they're in base, or maybe he'll get more snaps because he can play well. But if there's another injury, do they go with Sean Bradley, the sixth-round pick, or do they get Davion Taylor,
Sean Bradley, because he did flash a little bit in training camp.
But think about what you're saying. They're going to put the sixth-round pick over
ready.
The third-round pick.
He's not ready.
I know.
If
Isn't
you thought
crazy?
Kayvon Wallace wasn't ready, I warned people. I got some hate. I had to block some people on Twitter.
I mean, we're just telling the truth.
I told them before the season started, he's not ready.
Yeah.
Period. End of story. And they told me I didn't know what I was talking about and all this.
The guy did not play a whole lot of linebacker. People need to understand this was a traits-based pick.
Yes. Epps is ahead of him because he's been with him longer. Jeff's right. He did. At least he played last number 42.
Oh, you're talking about Wallace.
Yeah, no, Wallace was not ready.
Yeah, I'm talking about Taylor well.
Well, that's another story. But yeah. Kayvon Wallace, I was told before the season started, was so far away from being ready. He just was not for the role that they had him in. And this is not an easy scheme to learn. It's easy for the lineman to learn because you're just, other than the technique they use, you just get upfield.
Right.
It's a wide nine, but there's certain things they want because they've changed their... They've adjusted their secondary, their responsibilities a little because Schwartz wanted to expand their defense.
Mm-hmm.
But because of COVID, no offseason, no preseason, now with all these injuries, they're somewhat limited. But I did like last night that they got Wallace on the field. He finally played. He played a couple dozen snaps.
Yeah, good. He got some experience
out
of it. He got better because he played.
Right, he got on the field. That was good.
Right.
Their D-line, they stood up Avery. They stood up Derek Barnett, which they've done before. They haven't done a lot of it, but they did it. He did. Well, he had two sacks.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing though with Barnett is, I'm told he came into training camp a lighter weight.
Yeah,
might have been
concerning.
Yeah, maybe been more than 10 pounds lighter. Now he looked fine to me.
Yeah,
but he was down for like 5 weeks with whatever mysterious injury he had. I still don't know what that was, but
right.
Anyway, he looks good. This D line's looking nasty, man. This could be what they thought it would be—the best D line in football. So very soon,
they have to carry the burden because the back end, outside of Darius Slay, the back end is. And you've said it many times. Why don't teams attack the Eagles linebackers more?
Oh my God.
I should have said that. 15 for 15, George Kittle there was pretty good example of a team trying to do that.
By the way, they crushed I know Schwartz doesn't agree with this, but my people tell me Tyler Boyd destroyed them in the middle of the field and sideline throws.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not sure what Jim meant, but Tyler Boyd destroyed them.
What did Jim say? Did he say that?
Oh, the middle of the field, we took care of that. I don't know. I don't agree with that, but he would. He's the D coordinator. He's better access than we do.
Right.
Some people don't agree with it, but let me tell you something. George Kittle could have done anything he wanted last night, and he did.
Mm-hmm.
When a guy gets 15 passes thrown to him and he catches all 15, you had a bad scheme to stop him.
Yeah.
Okay?
No matter how good he is.
Much as we compliment Schwartz every once in a while, we criticize, he single-handedly almost took them down.
Right. Now, some people have asked, well, why didn't they put Darius Slay on George Kittle? And I'm like, I have to tell people, think about this. If you're playing man defense, which is what the Eagles play a lot of now, and you have Darius Slay covering the tight end, that means the linebacker who normally would cover that tight end, Nate Gary, now has to cover a wide receiver, okay? What matchup would you like more? Nate Gary on Brandon Ayuk, Nate Gary on Kendrick Bourne, or Nate Gary on Deebo Samuel? Loss either way.
Yeah, no, Deebo Samuel doesn't scare me. He's a scheme-based
wide
receiver.
Yeah, but you don't want Nate Gary covering him, though.
No, but I don't worry about him. I worry about Kittle. Here's why. Because if the Eagles were deep at corner, let's say that Maddox didn't get hurt and they had a good corner with size, and let's say you had Maddox as your slot corner, which is really what he's going to be in the future. They made a mistake playing him on the outside. Just was a mistake, a calculated mistake. You could have gotten a bigger corner, and you could have used him and doubled him. If they play this offseason right in terms of cornerback, Slay obviously is a player. That was a good trade. But if they would have drafted a tall corner like Rasul Douglas, who's now starting for the I didn't say that he's good, but he's playing like every snap for the Panthers. But if they had a tall corner with size.
Mm-hmm.
And had Maddox, you could have doubled him.
If you had a tall corner with size.
Yeah, and you could have not had it waste Slay on there, and you could have had him, because he goes play man, you could have had Slay on the Deebo Samuel.
Right.
That you could have done.
Right.
Because some teams do that. They don't always use their best corner when they're playing man. They sometimes use their number two corner and another player to double. But anyway, George Kittle almost single-handedly destroyed them. Whatever plan they... And I get he's great. He's the best tight end in football. Will probably be a Hall of Famer. But man, what was the plan?
A little absurd. 183 yards.
What was the plan? Can you tell me?
No, I mean, the plan was to try to cover him with linebackers and safeties, and it didn't work.
Well, then again, that's not Jim's fault. He didn't pick the linebackers. I don't think he did.
No, I can't imagine. 610-632-0975. Bill in Bristol has been waiting patiently to be on Inside the Birds Radio. What's going on, Bill?
I'm good. I just want to talk about Eagles and about Jim Schwartz. Like, I'm not like a big like research guy or anything, but I can't stand Jim Schwartz. Like, I don't know what it is at the end of games when he goes completely conservative and we just get destroyed in like 45 seconds. And literally every time there's a game breaking player on the other team. If you have DraftKings, you just play him. He's gonna go off every single time. Yeah. You know?
Well, I mean, he is a little bit of a bend up but don't break because, you know, he's going to rush for. Very much so, a bend but don't break. I mean, but Jim Johnson did that, and everybody loved Jim Johnson.
He did play prevent. He did, the late grade.
You know, Julio Jones is going to kill the Eagles. Like, any game-breaking player, and he just doesn't – I don't know if it's, like, a pride thing, but he will not, like – he won't change his adjustment to, like, try to, like attack, like double team that player, you know?
Bill, here's the thing. Thanks for the call.
Yeah.
This year, though, they're going almost exclusively to man coverage. No one's playing more man coverage than they are, so that's a difference. Jeff and I reported in the offseason on our show Inside the Birds, which you could hear every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 6 a.m. We did say that the word coming from the Eagles was that Jim was going to make some adjustments in the secondary. He was going to be a little bit more scheme-based, which he's really not been. 4-3, a wide nine is not a scheme. It's a front. He was going to do some pre-snap stuff, some post-snap stuff, and then 2 weeks ago when we weren't seeing it, I'm like, I guess I'm going to be wrong. And then we're starting to see some creativity with the defensive linemen.
Yeah.
When they get Will Parks back and he's healthy, Will Parks is going to do some things, so I think they're going to do some stuff. But until you have the right players, sometimes you're handcuffed. And Schwartz, and I'll defend him in this way, he clearly, until this season, was coaching to the personnel that he'd been given, and linebacker particularly, the guys that they have now. Mm. What I don't know what more, I'd like to know what he can do, but whatever he tried was a disaster.
Right, like we're seeing, anybody can sit here and say, Nate Gary is not a good linebacker, get him off the field. The question is, who are you putting on the field in Nate Gary's
spot?
Alex Singleton made a nice play. Maybe he is better than Nate Gary, but at the end of the day, when you're trying to win games and win a championship, Alex Singleton's probably going to get the red circle around him at some point, and they're going to expose his weaknesses too.
Exactly. Understand, no matter who they have out there or below average, it's not going to get any better, okay? Right. They're not bringing back Trotter out of retirement. That's not happening. So you have what you have. You live with it. You try to camouflage the weaknesses. Teams are going to expose them. Wait to see what the Steelers have. I'm going to give you a hint. They're going to go spread the entire time. And they're going to attack, and James Conner is going to get out. He can catch the football.
Yeah, they'll run at these guys, too,
by the
way.
Yeah, and the Maryland running back, their fourth-round pick, was really explosive. They're going to get him involved. This thing could look really ugly Sunday. I can't wait to preview the show on Friday, because I'll have more information then about what people are in the league are saying about Eagles tape, particularly on defense.
Which is the Maryland running back? Is that Jalen?
McFarland. No, McFarland.
Right. They also have a guy like Benny Snell who can just power over
you. He lost a lot of weight, but yeah, he's a power back. You're right.
Yeah.
This does not matter. The only thing the Eagles have going is the Steelers' offensive line has had a lot of injuries, and they will have some advantages, not a lot, some.
Uh-huh.
But this thing could get super ugly in this game with Eagles' defense.
We will see. All right, let's go to Pat in Bluebell. He's up on Inside the Birds Radio here on the Fanatic.
I'll defer to the experts here. When's the trade deadline?
Around the 26th, the last Tuesday of this month.
Who are you trying to pawn off?
Well, you got to look at the obvious. Forget the fact that we can't pick players. I mean, we all agree on that. I mean, come on, look at the history. So I would say, and that's the problem. If you approach another company, you approach them with team, you approach them with weakness. And because you want that, their player.
Who are you trying to pawn off? Who are you trading?
I'm pawning off anybody for a couple linebackers and players that don't get
what linebacker? Who's trading a linebacker? Who's trading a good linebacker?
Duke Riley.
Yeah, that's my point. You don't get like really good linebackers on the trade market unless there's a really good linebacker on a bad team and you're going
to
give up draft picks.
To trade with them. Unless you had something to trade with them, like Ertz.
Trading Ertz for a linebacker.
No.
It's just not.
Why not?
Come on, man.
I think Ertz is done.
Thanks for the call. But you're going to strengthen your linebacker. Let's just say you could get a good linebacker, and now you have no tight end, right? I mean, you got Dallas Goedert. He's hurt right now.
The offseason, listen, we all know they have not developed the linebacker position. Former Eagles president Joe Banner was on our show. We did a great interview with him last week. And what Joe said was he never said not to develop the linebackers, but he did say it wasn't the priority of as other positions were. That's what he actually told us in our May interview with him. Mm-hmm. We did another interview with him this past week where Joe talked about the philosophy and how the tough talks. He would talk about he and Andy. When they have a tough week, you know, they're meeting on Monday morning and they'd be honest to take a step back. And I wonder, Jeff, if Howie Roseman and Andy Weidel and Jeffrey Lurie are meeting and they're, you know, why is this team not good enough? We've outlined in the show tonight particularly a lot of the issues.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about Wentz. We talked about the linebackers. And we talked about the cornerback position. We talked about it's too old. But is that it? What else are we missing here, folks?
Well, I mean, they don't get takeaways. I say that coming off a game which they had three, but that was their first takeaway on defense going back to last year.
And, Jeff, prior to this game, in their previous seven games going back to last year, they only had four turnovers forced. That's embarrassing.
Right.
But Schwartz defended it. He goes, look, if you start blitzing, if you got to be disciplined because you're asking for trouble.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not disciplined, he just doesn't believe in blitzing. We know that Jim Washburn, the father of the wide nine, it was literally written in his contract, no blitzing. I'm joking, but he hated it. He just would not. He just didn't believe in it.
Yeah, I mean, and to go back to the whole trade deadline thing, I mean, you get Jannard Avery, you give up a fourth round pick. I'm trying to think of some players that have moved Golden Tate for a pick. You know, you don't see a player for player trade because you're not. Most people trading for a player aren't trying to weaken themselves in another area.
Right.
And you're not going to trade Zach Ertz for a linebacker.
No.
All right, Brad from Broomall is up next on Inside the Birds Radio on 97.5 The Fanatic.
So the previous caller just blew up my spot.
Go ahead, keep going.
Oh, you want to trade Zach Ertz for a linebacker also?
So we're $80 million over the cap for next year.
By the way, that's inaccurate. Just so you know, they don't know what the cap is.
Projection.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's not going to go much higher.
No.
It might get lower,
But what I'll tell you, there's some very easy moves they can make, which will put them about $20 million over.
Brad, I'll let you make your point.
Yeah.
Can the Eagles easily shave off that money and get to be cap compliant? Yes, but can they get to a point where they can now shave off enough to be enough million under to bring in a couple of free agents?
They're not there.
I don't know.
They're not there yet. But I've gone over this already. There's some moves that are going to be very simple,
mm-hmm.
but they're not going to get to $175 million. By those moves, they're going to have to do some other stuff, which they're probably not going to want to do.
Go ahead,
you
Brad.
You have to make some unpopular decisions.
Yes, correct.
You're
gonna
go with Andy Reid. You have to go Belichick. You have to do it. And you do it now. And let's just say now, but if Dallas Goedert's going to get healthy within a couple of weeks, you could get rid of Zach Ertz and make a move.
Here's the question, Brad. All right, and you're making a valid point, and I like the future that you're thinking here, but the trade deadline, as Adam just detailed, is what, 5 weeks from now, 6 weeks from now?
No, it's the last Tuesday of this month.
Of this month, so 4 weeks, right? Uh-huh. 3 weeks. The Eagles are they're a half game up. They're in first place right now, which may be ridiculous, but 3 weeks from now, they're probably still going to be in it. So when you pawn off Zach Ertz for picks and you think about the future, you're almost kind of saying this year doesn't matter, but it could matter for them.
Well, they got to see, like when I remember talking to the Eagles, Brad, thanks for the phone call. When I talked to the Eagles at the trade deadline, 2017, I said to this person, I said, hey, you know, you guys are really good. Like, I'm kind of surprised. And then the person said, yeah, we are too. We thought we'd be good. We didn't know it'd be this good. You know, we're talking now about what are we going to go for or not? Because we got to figure out, let's be honest with ourselves, are we a Super Bowl team?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer was yes. That's why they made the trade for JHI. And it goes to what you're talking about right now. They're going to have to answer to this in 4 weeks. They're not going anywhere in the playoffs. Even if they win the division, They're not going anywhere. Now,
were there any? What were the deadline deals last year? I'm struggling to remember. Any deadline deals?
Remember, they brought in Golden Tate. Was it last year?
2 years ago.
2 years ago.
And
okay.
So Detroit was not thinking playoffs that year.
Well, actually,
year.
I'll tell you something else. The Eagles were very close to getting Slay at the trade deadline last year.
Right.
Told by people with both teams, they just could not agree on the trade compensation.
Sure. And Detroit was thinking no playoffs for
them. Exactly. They were out of it, and they wanted
out.
So
that's my point. Yeah. You're not making a trade unless you're already conceding that you're not a playoff team. So I can't see the Eagles even three. Even if they lose two of the next three, they're not going to be that far out of the division.
I think they can call Detroit again. That might be their trade partner, or the Jets and Joe Douglas were really bad, and they love accumulating picks.
Uh-huh.
But no, that's the thing before we move on here. Howie Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie and Andy Watt are going to have to be honest with themselves. This on paper, with add the injuries, some of the guys aren't going to come back. This is an 8-8, 9-7 team. They're not competing for a Super Bowl this season, period. They're not. It is what it is.
Look, you and I know that, but I don't think that they're going to make that decision. I think if they're in it, especially with Jeffrey Lurie, if they're in it and they've shown signs of it, if they're 8-8, right, that means they've had a winning record from now until then. So my point is they're not going to look at that and say this is the time to get rid of guy. I just can't see it. I mean, I would credit them if they felt that way.
No, but I'm talking,
a good idea,
I'm talking more about acquiring players.
No, well, I'm addressing the idea of trading Zach Ertz.
If you're trading Ertz, you're giving up on the season.
Right, but there's not even, by the time we get to the deadline, they're not going to be out of it.
And again, I'm not saying that they're putting Zach, nothing is, I've heard, has suggested they're trying to move him.
Right.
But there's going to become a point this season, if these next two games are very likely they're going to lose. If they're not in the playoff race, they're going to be in, as you said.
They're going to be in it.
Pathetically, the worst I've ever seen in my lifetime.
Yeah.
In your lifetime and everyone else's lifetime listening.
I thought last year was the worst, but this is to hold my beer.
We'll see what will happen, because certain things could happen, which we didn't expect the trade deadline. Because when you know you're not good and you're being honest with yourself.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes you have to make some tough decisions.
All right, Denzel from West Philly is up next on 97.5 The Fanatic. Welcome to Inside the Birds Radio, Denzel.
Or Chris.
It just changed from, now it's Denzel again.
It is Denzel.
All right, it went from Denzel to Chris to Denzel, we're good now.
All right.
poor Tyler, I just raked him over the goals.
Go ahead, Denzel, go ahead.
I'm not a fan of, what's the defensive coordinator name again?
Jim Schwartz. I can tell.
Listen, when I say I cannot stand this man, I can't remember one game since he's been here that I looked at the game and said that we won this game by our defensive strategy. We don't shut down anybody. We don't put pressure on anything. I don't understand.
Remember the NFC? Do you remember the week before against Atlanta, who was on a hot streak? They were the sixth seed. They upset the Rams, the third seed. They came into here.
I'll say this before we get out of here. Someone with Eagles told me that Schwartz's defenses always get better.
Mm-hmm.
They'll finish in top 10 in most categories. He just micromanages it really well. Bates a self-scout. Whatever he does a good job with it. But I get what Denzel's saying. It is sometimes painful.
Yeah, he's criticizable, but I mean, you can't say he's never had a good defensive game.
No, but I know what he means. I'd like to see some disguise.
Yeah.
We don't see a lot of it. We rarely see, very little. This is a fact, by the way. It's not challenging.
Right. He's not considered the most innovative defensive mind. No, he's more
but
of a,
I
do what I do and I'm going to do it
that's
well.
It. Right. Yep.
All right. Well, that's going to probably be that'll be it for this show. We will be back next week, 6 to 8 p.m. here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Make sure you're checking out the Inside the Birds podcast every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 6 a.m. Also, check out our show's Tales from the Blind Side with three former Eagles. That'll drop tomorrow. And Thursday, we've got Grilling the Birds all on our YouTube channel, our podcast channel, and of course, our Sunday pregame show, which will start at 1 o'clock at 10 a.m. Leading up to the 1 o'clock kickoff against Pittsburgh. For Adam Kaplan, I'm Jeff Mosher. This has been Inside the Birds Radio here on 97.5 The Fanatic. And big thanks to Tyler Zuli in the window there. Have a great night, everybody.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.